I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, I'm going to close the circle, because of course we can talk about these things from a public health standpoint or from clinician standpoint, from research, but what really matters is how it affects families, you know, persons who give birth. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the results of some emerging research that we have. There are several studies out there which are deemed to be person-centered research. I'm going to report the results to you from Changing Childbirth in BC, which was a provincial study we did in British Columbia, Canada, which reports the results of 3,400 care provider experiences across 3,167 women or families who gave birth. Also, the Giving Voice to Mothers study, which was a study of maternity care experience and access to care and the experiences of care among communities of color and among women who chose to deliver in homes and birth centers. In the US, we have just closed the data collection for that, so my results that I'll report are preliminary. We've done that in a community-based participatory action way, and I'll explain that to you in a moment. Also, the maternity care experience study from Hungary, so that's a middle resource country now, with about 1,200 women. And then a look at, again, population level data in the US about access and integration of midwifery. We did a mapping study looking at access and the ability of midwives to practice to full scope across the United States, where we find that outcomes are very, very disparate, and we'll show you how those things connect. So there are some publications that give you the details about how we've developed the tools that I'm going to talk about. I won't go into a lot of the methods around those, but we have validated the tools that we use to measure these things, like concepts like autonomy and respect. So when I talk about community-based participatory action research, I'm not sure how many of you know what that means, but basically it means that researchers work in partnership with the people who are being studied and those people are the ones who direct how the questions are asked, what questions are asked, who they're asked to, and how the stories are told. So this is, I say this, I'm here just as a representative to all these amazing women who came out of the woods. We had so many participants, over 24. When we launched the study, which was an hour-long quantitative study in BC, in 24 hours we had 1,300 completed survey responses for this one-hour-long. So the value of doing participatory research is that when the questions are asked that are really important to the people who are being studied, they will participate. And that's what we found again and again and again. So we had the data that I'm going to report represents the work of these four work groups, which were women who experienced maternity care in the U.S. in the last 5 years. In Canada, the women said, no, we don't want to just look at women, the single birth in the last 5 years, which as researchers was anxiety producing, because we always want to know what's our denominator and you know, which sample are we talking about. But the women said, but if we don't ask them to tell us about what that was most important to them, we won't hear about differences in experiences they had in one setting versus another, or with one provider versus another. So we, in that case, I had to learn mixed effects analysis to control for the effects of one woman's data, you know, driving the outcomes, and we've done that. We also had many women who experienced multiple barriers. So women who had been incarcerated, immigrants and refugees, women who lived on the street, women who lived below the poverty line or experienced other barriers, and women who may not have socioeconomic barriers but were marginalized because of the place that they chose to give birth. And in the US and in Canada, we were talking about home in Canada, it was home and hospital. In the US, it was home, birth center, and hospital. And in Hungary, it was home and hospital. So the study topics that these community members chose to study were access to care, preferences for care, experiences with maternity care, especially around decision making, and knowledge of midwifery care. So I'm going to just talk to you a little bit about the decision making portion of it, because when we talk about interventions and too much too soon, we need to understand who's making the decisions and what's driving the decisions. And when you ask women, this is data from the BC study, which had nearly 3,000 women responding to this question. We asked them to say, how important was it for them to lead the decisions? How important was it for them, for their providers to lead the decisions or to get input? And as you can see from this, I don't know if you can read it from back there, but 95% of women from all of these backgrounds said that it was very important or important to them, that it very important or important to me that I lead the decisions about my pregnancy, birth, and baby care. Now, among that 95%, about half of those women also wanted the input of their providers. It was very important to me that my doctor or midwife guides the decision. So guiding the decision is different than leading, right? And so there was that overlap. But for at least more than half of the women who responded to that, that was not as important as them leading. So when we asked who made the decision, so in this population we had about a 40 to 50% C-section rate among the obstetrician clients, about a 23% rate among family physicians, and 15% among the midwives. And these were for all low-risk women. We did control for risk factors, et cetera. And that's another whole analysis, which we will see. But you can see from this that the orange and yellow are my maternity care provider recommended a C-section before I went into labor. My maternity care provider recommended a cesarean when I was in labor. The bulk of the decision is being driven by providers. So understanding that, the surveys had been populated with some validated tools that the communities had adapted to measure what they wanted to. And some of them were about respectful care, and some of them were about autonomy. And we actually took one of those sets of questions and did the psychometrics to create a new measure, which we call the Mother's Autonomy and Decision-Making Scale. And on this scale, the participant, the person who's experienced pregnancy care, will answer certain questions. My doctor or midwife asked me how involved in decision-making I wanted to be. My doctor or midwife told me that there are different options for my maternity care. My doctor or midwife, and in this case, they could actually populate. They could answer the question separately for doctors if they had a midwife also. So we knew who they were talking about. Just for the purposes of the slide, I've presented it this way. My doctor or midwife explained the advantages or disadvantages of the maternity care options. My doctor or midwife helped me to understand all the information. And then these were the three things that the women added that said, no one is asking us whether we had enough time to consider our options. Nobody's asking me whether I was able to choose what I wanted and whether my choices were respected. So those things were added, and we revalidated the scale. And then we also have a much larger scale. It's about 14 items, but it talks about overall, while making decisions during my pregnancy and birth, I felt comfortable asking questions, I felt comfortable declining care, I felt comfortable accepting the options for care that my provider recommended, I chose the care options I received, I felt that I was treated poorly by my maternity care provider because, and several different options between race, sexual orientation, type of health insurance, and how did that affect their behavior? I held back from asking questions or discussing my concerns because my maternity care provider seemed rushed. I thought my maternity care provider might think I was being difficult. I felt discriminated against. Now, some of the data that I'm going to present to you, where we started out by just looking at simple descriptive data, how people were answering these individual questions, and we realized that they all hung together. We validated it as a full scale to measure this concept of respect. So you'll see how that works. The one I want to point out to you, though, in this scale, is that there is one item which says, I felt coerced into accepting options that my provider suggested. Now, when that was suggested as an item to include, I was uncomfortable as a provider. I was like, coerced, you know, really? Will people understand what that means? Will they use that? That seems awful strong. You know, we want to have an even number of positive and negative, but there was a very strong response from from all across North America that that was the word that had to be used. And in fact, the data show that that was an important concept to, as I will show you. So overall, what we found was that what was more important than whether or not women had a C-section or an induction or these or augmentation was whether or not they felt pressured. So we did what's called a mixed effects analysis and an aggression analysis where we looked at what's driving the sense of respect or lack of autonomy when we use the scale scores as an outcome measure. So, you know, the MADAM scores are autonomy, the MORI scores are respect. So what makes the scores go up where they have more autonomy or more feel more respect, and what makes them go down? And we thought maybe it's just that they're unhappy that they had the C-section or that they had an induction. And what we found actually is that it wasn't whether or not they had the intervention, it was whether or not they felt involved in decision making. It was whether or not they felt pushed into it, coerced into it, whether or not they felt pressured. So out of our entire, all these samples, 2 in 5 women felt pressured to have the C-section, 38%. And MORI scores or respect scores went up. They did go up. You know, if you had a C-section, it was less. And with an instrumental vaginal delivery, like forceps or vacuum, it was a little bit better. But of course, the scores were highest with spontaneous vaginal delivery. But I should mention that some of these women were being pressured into having these interventions, and some of them declined those. And they still felt disrespected, even though they had the spontaneous vaginal delivery. They felt overall that they were disrespected. 54% of women felt pressured to have an induction. And in the US, the induction rates were at 40%. Poor treatment came alongside that. So all these measures of poor treatment and their fears of poor treatment. Poor treatment, regardless of provider type, equaled decreased respect, decreased autonomy. Again, I'm talking about those scale scores. When they had a difference of opinion with their providers, women held back their questions if they wanted different care because they were worried about this poor treatment. And they also had lower MADAM and MORI scores. In Hungary, when we tried to look at this more carefully, this is just one of the outcomes. This is episiotomy. So we heard in middle resource countries that we have high rates of episiotomy. In Hungary, it's a 70% rate in our sample. And it's 70% of people who had the episiotomy and 63% of them who did not give consent for that, and it was done anyway, done without their consent. When we look at socioeconomic status and race, this is from the Giving Voice to Mothers study, and we know, as we've talked about, there are huge disparities by race, and we've drilled down and we've looked at this, and we see that if you're a woman of color and a Medicaid recipient, your sense of autonomy and respect, that's autonomy on the left and respect on the right, the far left, you can see that the lowest scores came from if you were poor, if you were publicly paid, and you were a woman of color, your experience of autonomy and respect was the worst. We also found that provider type influences autonomy. And, you know, we drilled down into this. These are uncomfortable and dangerous data to say, and is it just about whether or not you're a doctor or midwife? And I'm a midwife, you know, leading this team. I'm working with many physicians and other professionals on my team, and is it how we're socialized? Is it, what's going on here? So we looked a little further. We did find that the respect scores were lower with hospital births than with home births, and that midwifery clients consistently reported more respectful treatment wherever they were. And we think that it has something to do with time, because we found that there were higher MADAM scores. They were asked, how long did you have in a prenatal appointment? How long did you have when these discussions happened? And with more time, they had higher autonomy scores with more time to process information. When we looked at this in our mapping study, and the mapping study is, you know, much more complex, but just a taste of it, just to show you, if you look at these maps, The dark purple are the states where midwives are integrated across birth settings, and they are more likely to be able to practice to their full scope. The integration scores run, the highest integration score you can get is 100, and I have to say that in the US, the highest score we got was 61, so we're not a highly integrated state. However, if you look at the difference, you'll see that the white and paler states are where there aren't as much integration. And if you look at the outlines, and it may be hard for you to see that there, but I'm happy to share these, the red outlines are where we have the highest C-section rates, the lowest spontaneous vaginal delivery, the highest and the lowest vaginal birth after cesarean. The green ones are the high spontaneous vaginal delivery and C-section. We've looked at breastfeeding, induction, neonatal mortality, many outcomes that are, you know, again, publicly available data through the CDC, and these correlations are very, very, very strong. So we know that integration density, just whether or not there are midwives in your community, and this is true, and I'm talking about Canada, U.S., and Hungary, that access density increases interventions and reduces the ability to be successful with breastfeeding, increases, you know, if you don't have access. The correlations between neonatal mortality, and especially in those states where we have high percentage of black births being reported, are there. So I'm almost done here. I just want to leave you with a couple of quotes. These, we have some qualitative data too, and this is what the women say. They made an anatomy scan in the third trimester sound like a good idea while I was trying to decide if I wanted to decline because of my fear of them wanting to tell me my baby was big and wanting to induce. I didn't decline the scan, and that's what happened. The maternal fetal medicine doctor told me I was going to be induced at 39 weeks. No risk of no talk of risks or alternatives, told me, then proceeded to tell me that I wouldn't want my baby to die by waiting. At my most recent birth, I had a nurse tell me when I said I wanted to go home and come back to try the induction the next day that she had a patient do that and the baby was stillborn. She did this while I was alone in the room and my husband was returning with my parents. My midwife always seemed rushed and I felt stupid for asking questions. She told me I was anxious. One doctor in particular was awful. He bullied me. Tried scare tactics, ganged up on me by showing up with a team of four to convince me to do what he wanted. It made my labor unnecessarily stressful. I will avoid the hospital at all costs in any future pregnancy unless absolutely necessary. So that's, I think the parting thing is that we just, so Ellen and I just came back from the Human Rights and Childbirth Conference in India. These are global issues. This is not about India or Hungary or sub-Saharan Africa. This is a global problem. Women are feeling disrespected. In India, when I was just there, the women were getting up, they were talking about it, the midwives were talking about it, that they may have these cash incentives to go into the hospital, but when they show up, the orderlies say, well, you have the cash, you know, why don't you buy yourself your own food? Why don't you get your own induction? Why don't you pay the doctor? And the governments have not increased the number of physicians, nurses, orderlies, or midwives. And so they're massively overworked and under-resourced, and they're exhausted. So they take that exhaustion out on the women, and then the women don't come back. So it's happening all over the world, these kinds of disrespectful behaviors, which then connect with outcomes. And institutional birth has not been shown to be the answer, as you can see in our very upwardly mobile thing, that it's about skilled attendance and respectful care. It's not in Sri Lanka, where they invested in upskilling community health workers and midwives. They actually brought maternal mortality down. And to answer the question is that we have these huge numbers of women going into hospitals with three to a bed and overcrowded hospitals and terrible conditions, and we have not improved the outcomes. That has not worked. They've tried that. They need to try something else.